Okay, in our last module, you learned about how to pause, how to drop that flame. And this module, you're going to learn something really, really important. And out of all the drops, I'd say it's practically the essence. It's really
This is
important.
Vimala's favorite drop.
Yes. And this is called drop the
Vein.
Vein, or learning how to reflect, because we're learning it's not all about me.
Do you realize there's another person in your relationship that's really, really important? You've signed up to be with that person for your life, pretty much in many cases, not in every circumstance of relationships, but for most people. So getting into reflection is the key that unlocks conflict.
And you're going to learn that it's not all about you, and you're going to learn the price of being right, or the cost of being right. And you're going to learn how to really reflect, because you can't, or no one has ever resolved a conflict until they've gotten into this place of reflection.
So in this module, you're going to get all the ways how to do that and take it forward so that you can become a master of it. And remember, don't just take what you like, take the whole drop and practice it, practice it.
Yeah,
so
this is
important.
One you're going to have to practice.
If you want mastery, be committed. Here's a bullet point summary of what we covered in module one. First, become conscious that something's actually going wrong. This is a very simple statement, but it's a big step and it makes all the difference. Next, recognize your dysfunctional patterns. I'm sure they might have popped up this week, but if not, keep searching. You'll find them and then you can work on them. Don't let your anger become the issue. Now, we talked a lot about that, how that shifts the whole thing away from the issue and we get caught up in the anger. So there's a need to access the mode of goodness, to be mindful.
We also covered the need to change our state from anger to calm. Remember the calm is strength mantra. And we discussed ways to do that, state changes, ones like calling out to Krishna, changing your atmosphere or environment. And you can use these individually or combined.
Experiment. See what works for you to drop the flame.
Now let's get started with module two. And remember, last module was all about you. This week, it's all about understanding the other person in the relationship. Let's first explain why we have a mirror as a symbol for this drop, and we'll explain what we mean by vain. A vain person is someone who always thinks of himself. You can imagine someone who looks at himself in the mirror and thinks, I'm so great, I'm so beautiful, and most of all, I'm always right. But that's not what we want when dealing with conflict. Rather, we want and we need to practice reflection. And this means not staying focused on oneself, but rather to become like that mirror, trying to accurately reflect the other person's point of view back to them.
Reflecting is all about being empathic, attempting to gain an understanding from the other person's point of view. What's their experience of this particular circumstance?
And reflection is a vital and proactive skill for deepening and strengthening our relationships. Reflection needs to be genuine, because genuine reflection shows the other person that we really are trying sincerely to understand and empathize with their experience. And when you get into reflection, it'll help you to dissolve your conflicts quickly and painlessly, because again, it acts like that mirror. It's reflecting the other person's point of view, their perspective back to them. And this has the effect of immediately disarming the tendency for that defensive reaction, that attack-defend cycle.
Our normal default setting is different. It's very egocentric, and reflection helps to shift that. Getting into reflection is an invitation to function at a far deeper level. It means going further into your relationship. And reflection is a skill that is developed through practice.
It's not a bad idea here for us to state the obvious. Relationships are about two people.
Isn't that amazing? It's about two people.
It could be the husband and wife dynamic. It could be parent-child, teacher-student, or friend and friend. Relationships are not just about ourselves and how we feel. In the context of conflicts or upset, reflecting means going beyond what's happening for you, what you are experiencing, to considering what is happening for that other person, and that person is the one who's so often the vital one in your life. We call people selfish, or egocentric, who only care about themselves and how things are for them. Now, these people, as you know, are not much fun to be around, as they tend to be highly focused on their own feelings, their circumstances. And surprisingly, they are quite insensitive to everyone else. Have you ever noticed that?
Isn't it amazing that with so many defects that we all have, now we know this from our philosophy, imperfect senses, being illusioned, we make mistakes, we have a cheating propensity, but we still think that the way I see this issue, how I feel about it, what I understand is the absolute truth. It's got to be this way. By the spell of illusion, we consider we possess immaculate perception. And really, if we look at it carefully, this is the cheating propensity at its worst.
Srila Prabhupada told a funny story in Melbourne about this. Here's his story. One gentleman, he was hard of hearing, so he is calling his wife, Mrs. Such and Such. Mrs. Such, she is replying, "Yes, I'm coming." But he is hard of hearing, so he is thinking that my wife is hard of hearing. She is replying, "Yes, I'm coming," but this rascal, he is hard of hearing, but he is thinking his wife, that is his wife's fault because she is hard of hearing. He cannot hear, but he is thinking my wife is hard of hearing. This is the example. A man thinks that others are like himself. Atmavat manyate jagat. This is nature, that atmatat, that he is thinking of himself. Therefore, others must be like that.
When we confine ourselves to our own limited perceptions, we fall into a self-centered way of thinking. This is how I see it. Therefore, the whole universe should see it that way also. Empathy, on the other hand, is a mode of goodness, Vaishnava quality, that allows us to see beyond ourselves. Just as Chanika Pandit instructed, one should always treat others as he would like to be treated. So in our relationships, it's so important to get in touch with the other person's point of view. If you want true connection with the people in your life, it's imperative that you learn to respect and consider their experience.
Yes, because so often when we examine someone's action or intention, we make these hasty judgments. What we need to realize is that this is coming from our own limited perception.
One effective way we've found to help us shift our perception is what we call the turnaround. Now, it's not the only way to shift things, but this is a very effective way. It's often quite humorous. It's about looking at what you see as a fault in others, then turning it around to see if you can see the same fault in yourself. More often than not, you'll find exactly the same shortcoming, something that you yourself need to work on. Now, that's amazing. Generally, you're going to find it quite quickly. For example, you might be saying, "She's so grumpy." Hey, wait a minute. Turn it around. Ask yourself, "Where am I being grumpy? Hey, I'm so grumpy right now. I'm grumpy about her being grumpy."
You'll be amazed at how often you can find the source in yourself. And that pointing finger turns inward in a healthy way. And this makes us less judgmental of others. It also shows us that we have more than enough to work on about ourselves.
An important thing about relationships is that they force us to look beyond ourselves. And this is good for our Krishna consciousness. Often we think relationships are a problem, but personal relationships help us to develop so many good qualities. We learn how to appreciate others, to be patient with others. We have to be humble in relationships, otherwise they don't work very well. We have to be tolerant. We have to develop love. So there's so many qualities, and most of all, giving up our selfishness. All too often, relationships become a source of pain, But the whole point of being in relationship is to help us develop our loving propensity.
In material relationships or love or lust, it's all about oneself and what I want. As devotees, we know that we need to get out of that paradigm. Relationships with devotees, whether husband, wife, children, friend, they're all based on loving service and reciprocation. Srila Prabhupada used to call this the mood of cooperation. And even on a material level, to become successful, you need to give, you need to sacrifice. Indraduma Swami relates a story about how he was once on a plane and he encountered a couple. They were in their 90s. Now, they're heading out to celebrate their 75th wedding anniversary, 75 years. So Maharaj took the opportunity to inquire. He said, "I'm often the priest for many weddings, and I also have to give many wedding speeches. So please, could you give me just some words of advice that I can give to these newlyweds? What is it that has held you together for so long and so happily?" And you know, they both replied simultaneously, "Yeah, always give more than you take."
It's interesting to note that whenever there is conflict, we use the term misunderstanding. Most of the time, that's really what it is. It's a misunderstanding. We miss the understanding. We miss the truth of what's really happening. Driven by passion, we really don't understand even our own experience. What to speak of understanding the other person's experience. We passionately race ahead of ourselves and make up a story in our minds about what we think the other person's meaning. We don't really know, but we decide that we do, and then we make up a huge drama. Before you know it, we begin reacting to our own made-up story. And it isn't any wonder that things start to get worse.
So fortunately, in drop one, we've learned that we need to drop the flame, to pause, to slow down, to not react to that made-up story in our heads. Instead, we look to find out what's really behind the incident. When we keep a cool head and take the time to reflect, we can easily tackle those misunderstandings and see them for what they really are. When we combine the drops, we again see how important it is to access that mode of goodness.
The Bhagavad Gita informs us that there is always competition between the three modalities to attract our attention. Now, there's definitely a payoff from functioning in any of the three modes. Otherwise, no one would act accordingly. In ignorance, for example, you might get into name-calling, screaming, yelling, intimidating, physically hurting someone, so many things.
Yes, and in the mode of ignorance, it starts and ends in distress and destruction. So the only payoff you get is to vent. No one feels good, and the relationship is more or less doomed to failure.
In passion, you might attempt to prove your point, to prove the other person is wrong, to prove that you're right.
Yes, I've been there. In the mode of passion, you feel good initially, forcefully trying to prove that you are right, to get your point across, hook or by crook, but it always ends in distress.
So when we're dealing with upsets, conflicts, passion and ignorance don't serve us very well.
Ah, there is another mode. To act in the mode of goodness, that means to reflect on what's actually going on for both parties. This means we do have to restrain ourselves, which may not feel great at first, especially when we're just itching to let loose and prove our own point. But the mode of goodness approach, it culminates in enlightenment and happiness. We resolve those misunderstandings and we start to experience peace.
Srila Prabhupada taught us that the mode of goodness is the takeoff platform for spiritual life. However, living in the mode of goodness doesn't necessarily mean that everything is going to be plain sailing from there on. People often look at successful Vaishnava couples and think, "Oh, they must never have any conflict. They must get on well all the time." Just go and ask them and you'll find out. Even the most successful marriages, and that includes myself and Vimala, have upsets. It's not that there won't be upsets. That's a utopian idea. It's how we deal with them that is what matters. Conflict is normal and healthy and can deepen the relationship when we've got the right tools to work through to the other side.
Often devotees, they get discouraged in relationships when they encounter this conflict. Hey, it's not supposed to be like this. We whinge and we whine, but nothing changes. Srila Prabhupada, however, was very realistic and pragmatic. He even warned us against expecting this utopia. In one letter to Atreya Rishi, and this is in 1972, he wrote, "So we shall not expect that anywhere there is utopia. Rather, that is impersonalism. People should not expect that even in the Krishna consciousness society, there will be utopia. Because devotees are persons, therefore, there will always be some lacking. But despite everything they may do, their topmost intention is to serve Krishna."
Srila Prabhupada was always encouraging us to focus on each other's good qualities. In the very same letter, he advises, quote, "The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on this planet, better than kings, all of them. So we should always remember that, and like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities of a person." So Srila Prabhupada certainly wanted us to nobly strive for the highest ideals, but he also spoke about reality. Quote, "Not like the utopians who are like the flies, who always go to the open source to find the faults in a person, and because they cannot find any utopia, or because they cannot find anyone without faults, they want to become void." Now, this is an interesting point. I'm sure you've experienced this and you're upset. You think, that's it. I'm finally going to become like a stone. I'm going to, as no more relationships. I'm just going to withdraw into myself. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing to this here. They want to become void, merge, nothing. They think that is utopia, to become void of personality.
This was a good letter. In ending this same letter, Srila Prabhupada outlined the power of keeping a cool head and a humble attitude. And this is how he says it. "I'm very pleased that you are assisting your god brothers so nicely. Yes, this is our real position, to be servants of the servants of the servants. And by your quiet and humble attitude, you shall set the example of Vaishnava so that all may learn from you. And very soon their puffed up attitude will disappear and they will come to you and seek your advice in matters." So reflecting on how it is for others requires this development of humility. And this is the crest jewel of Vaishnava qualities. We all need to work on it. And we all know how happy Srila Prabhupada was to see his followers work in cooperation and synergy.
Lower mode strategies like the attack and defend conflict cycle that we've been discussing in module one, they simply keep us stuck. You may be so convinced about how you see an issue and how it's affecting you, but until you start to reflect on how it is for the other person, you're going to remain stuck in your upset. The laborious tactics of attempting to prove that you are in the right wears everything down, and even worse, it often can get ugly. The outcome is always a lose-lose.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada stressed this point. He would laugh when telling the story of the scissors and the knife. Suhotra Swami relates the story here. There is a story often told by Srila Prabhupada called Scissors Philosophy. This story illustrates stubbornness when someone only sees their point of view. So two men were having an argument. They wanted to cut something and they argued about which is the best tool to use to cut. One was saying, "Yes, the knife, for this thing, knife is better." But the other was saying, "No, scissors." So back and forth, one saying knife, the other saying scissors. It became a very hot argument. Then finally, the one who was advocating the knife, he said, "If you don't agree with me, I'll throw you in the river." And the other one said, "I'll never change my mind." So then the knife man, he picked up the scissors man and threw him in the river. And the scissors man, he couldn't swim, so he was starting to drown. Finally, the knife man said, "Look, if you agree with me, I will come in and save you." So, just as the scissors man was going down for the third time, he put up his hand out of the water and went like this, showing scissors movement with his two fingers.
So sometimes we refuse to get out of this attack-defense cycle because we're so stubborn and feel the need to always be right. So when you get in that position, get stuck, just remember the scissors man. The good news is that it doesn't have to be either knife or scissors. There are other ways forward. However, new alternatives that will work for both parties can only be generated when we understand the other person's point of view. That means we first have to learn to listen to them. Isn't that an interesting point? I'm going to say that again, in case you weren't listening. That's my attempt at
a joke.
It's often said that God gave us two ears and only one mouth for an obvious reason. And our experience confirms that we do much better in relationships and in life itself when we listen twice as much as we speak.
Yes, one of Stephen Covey's seven habits of highly effective people is, first seek to understand, then to be understood. Now, this sequence is really important. Once someone feels understood, then they become ready to listen. Just as a person who is drowning can only think of getting air and nothing else, in the same way, until a person feels understood, it's very hard for them to listen. Being understood is like psychological air, as Covey puts it. Empathic listening, and this is often called active or reflective listening, this creates that culture of trust and also a climate for healthy resolution. It helps to build relationships based on honor and mutual respect, which is really important.
Now let's show you how to practically use this empathic listening to take your relationship to a higher level. This is just a short introduction to help you get started. First, begin by attempting to reflect back in words what the other person is saying to you and how you think they are feeling. Attempt to repeat as close to verbatim as you can what the other person just said about how they experienced whatever happened and how it made them feel. Now remember, check what you're thinking. We know you've got your story already about what you thought, but this is in another position. We're in the reflective mode. Try a few times, adjust your understanding till you get it right. And don't worry, they'll soon let you know if you get it wrong. There's an example. I think this is, just to give you the idea, I think this is what I hear you saying, and please correct me if I've got it wrong.
Yeah, just like a mirror, we want to reflect back as accurately as we can without twisting the meaning. We don't want to be like those mirrors at the fair which make you look all fat, skinny, or distorted. We want to reflect back as close to the real meaning as we can. And of course, a little humility always helps. This is what I understand. Am I on the right track? Versus, yep, I understand. I got it. I know what you mean.
The core task when we're using empathic listening is to demonstrate that you understand how the other person is actually feeling and how they're experiencing the situation. When you get into empathy, real empathy with another person, you'll know from their responses that you're on the right track. You'll start to see it, that they're getting a really positive experience. Now you can download our short PDF that goes into more detail on empathic listening skills. That's available with this module. It's important to understand that relationships grow out of love. A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. It's an old proverb.
Yes, and Srila Prabhupada talked about this force and love principle. It was on a morning walk in Hawaii in 74. A devotee asked, "We have the choice of being controlled either by love or by force." Srila Prabhupada, "Yes, when we decide to be controlled by Krishna, it is out of love for him. Similarly, you are being controlled by me, but there is no force. You serve me voluntarily out of love. I am not paying you. Still, when I ask you to do something, you immediately do it. Why? There is love between us." So you are already invested in your relationship. This person is obviously very important to you. It's someone you love. so force will kill this love. We can serve our husband's wife out of some dharmic duty. This has been done many times, even in ISKCON, without that love, but we don't need to settle for this. So it's very vital to always keep that love and affection in your relationship healthy and alive.
Srila Prabhupada warned about love versus force in another letter to a Gurukula teacher. It's not something mechanical process. If we force such a way, they will come out like this. No, we are persons, and Krishna is a person. And our relationship with Krishna, he leaves open as a voluntary agreement always. And that voluntary attitude, yes, Krishna, I shall gladly cooperate, whatever you say. That ready willingness to obey is only possible when there is love. Forcing will not make me agree, but if there is love, oh, I shall gladly do it. That is bhakti, that is Krishna consciousness. So it's imperative to understand that no resolution has ever been achieved and no conflict ever resolved until someone makes the shift into reflection. This means that every time, now you've got to think about this, every time you've ever successfully worked through a conflict, and it may have taken you days or hours or whatever time it's taken, it may have even been weeks, one of the parties involved in the conflict has consciously or unconsciously made the shift into reflection.
Yes, so often we feel, well, if I try to understand him or her first, then I'm going to lose out. They won't understand me. And that's what I want, for someone to understand how it is for me. But the magic of reflection really is that as soon as you make that shift into understanding their point of view, you then open the door and you allow them to do the same for you. When you truly understand this principle, that the first person who gets into reflection is never the loser, you will be enthusiastic to dive into reflection and you'll save everyone so much wasted time and unnecessary suffering.
So take up the challenge. Make it a race to see who can be first into reflection. You're not going to lose out.
We promise. So that just about wraps it up for this week's module, Drop the Vein. Now, before you go, here's a short homework that will help you consolidate what you've learned in Module 2.
I can't overemphasize the benefit you'll get when you actually do the homework. We often forget the importance of putting things into practice. We hear a nice video, we hear a nice training course, and we think, yeah, I've heard that. That was kind of cool. But we're talking about really making transformational shifts in your life. So if you want to get the best from these videos, from these modules, start practicing the homework. Do the homework, see the difference. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
For this week's homework, what we want you to do is to practice combining drop one, and that's drop the flame or pause, with drop two, what you've just learned, drop the vein, that's about reflecting. So now that you're getting good at pausing and dropping that flame, it's time for you to practice getting into reflection mode. Remember, this is vital. This is the key that will unlock your conflict.
Practice reflecting back how you think the other person feels. Use your empathic listening skills. Express in your own words what you understand of what the other person's experience is. Otherwise, you just might think that you know. For example, I think this is what I hear you saying. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Then attempt to repeat as closest to verbatim as you can what the other person just said about how they experienced whatever has happened and how it made them feel. You will get confirmation and clarity on what they are really feeling.
Yeah, they will let you know, don't worry. And the last part of the homework is to gauge and reflect on the response you get. First of all, how did you feel? How did the other person respond to your attempt at reflecting listening? You could even ask about your new reflective approach, how it was received or experienced by that other person. Ask them, did it feel better for them? How did it feel better?
To demonstrate how to use reflective or empathic listening, Vimala and I are now going to share a short role play from one of our live presentations, something that we do in the live presentation. And I'll give you a template to work from until you get good at it. Now, this should be fun, as we're never quite sure how this role play will lead us. It's quite a tricky thing. So let's see how it goes.
And by the way, it is fictional. Here's an example. A wife to a husband. You make the same old jokes about my cooking that you always make in front of our friends. And I've asked you, I've told you so many times, I don't like it when you do that. It makes me feel kind of unappreciated.
So here's me trying to reflect back. So you don't like my jokes, really. You don't like when I joke around. Is that...
Well, it's not the joking, actually. I don't mind the joke. I suppose I'm just sensitive about that cooking one. Yeah, it makes me feel kind of, yeah, like you think I'm a bad cook or something and you want to let everyone know.
Ah, okay. So I think I understand what you're saying. You say that specific joke about your cooking and stuff is something that you're sensitive about and it makes you feel that I'm trying to make you out as a bad cook. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay, so... That gives you an idea of the reflective listening process. I'm sure you've tried it before yourself, but it just gives you a little example. So here's the steps for you to practice. Person one, first of all, states what they feel about a recent conflict. Now, keep it brief. Person two attempts to mirror back exactly what the person said. Not like a parrot, but the essence of what they've said. What I hear you saying is, then person one confirms whether or not person two got it right, just like we did. And then person two continues and modifies until person one is happy that they actually got it right.
So now it's your turn to practice. This week we want you to find someone to role play with. Come up with your own typical scenario and practice those steps. Even better, you might find a real-life chance to use your reflective listening skills.
There's hundreds of good books about listening skills, and the point, though, is that you actually have to do it. It's something you need to practice, but you will pick it up. It's just a brief summary that we've given you. And don't forget to download our PDF, which outlines the different stages of empathic listening in a little more detail. So that wraps up today's model. Our next module is about how to get beyond the blame game.
Oh, the blame game.
Drop three is all about how to accept personal responsibility to do whatever it takes to come to the other side of any conflict or upset.
And when you think about it, responsibility, that's part of our life. That runs through every aspect of our life. So it's very relevant.
You'll be amazed at how this drop will transform every aspect of your life.
So we look forward to being with you again for module three. Until then, just keep chanting Hare Krishna and don't forget to practice how to do those first two drops. That's pause and reflect.
And we look forward to seeing you for module three. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. See you there.